3, 2, 1. Good day, listeners. This is your host, Michael Martins, with the Martins Critical Review, broadcasting early this morning from a beautiful, cool, and sunny day here in South Central British Columbia. In today's program, we revisit with one of our former guests to receive a debriefing regarding his mission to walk across Canada from the Pacific Ocean to Ottawa to bring awareness to the injustices perpetrated upon Canadian citizens by its draconian and pathetic government. Joining us again for this episode is Warrant Officer James Topp, a gentleman poised to become a modern-day Canadian hero. Warrant Officer Topp dutifully served the once great nation of Canada in the Canadian Army for almost 30 years. James learned he would face punitive administrative action for not complying with the Chief of Defense staff order for all members to get their useless and dangerous COVID-19 vaccination. James was born in North York, Ontario, and grew up in BC in the coastal and Fraser Valley regions. He joined the Canadian Army in the mid-1990s as an infantryman, where he initially served in the Princess Patricia Canadian Light Infantry and the Royal Canadian Regiments. His list of overseas missions includes Croatia, Bosnia, Macedonia, and Afghanistan. He was deployed and trained in the UK, US, Australia, Brazil, New Zealand, Norway, and the Canadian Arctic. James, welcome back to the show. As always, it's an honor to be able to speak with you today, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Michael. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. I don't have quite the tan that you do, but you've been putting a few more hours outside than I have, so good for you. So you've been a busy gentleman since we last spoke. Can you please share with the listeners your motivation and rationale for embarking upon this journey?
Yeah, absolutely. In and around, as you recall, November, both with the public service and with the armed forces, due to my objection to mandates requiring disclosure of your vaccination status or the requirement to have a vaccine. I was placed on leave without pay with the public service. And also I was informed I was going to be released from the armed forces on an item code 5F, which is to summarize, it's the a release dependent on an inability or an unwillingness to change behavior. In this case, the behavior is non-compliance with the Chief of Defense Staff Directive with regards to vaccination. So as I had significant issues with a lot of the the implementation of these mandates and the first and foremost, it wasn't so much my objection with regards to the vaccine themselves, even though I do have serious questions about their nature and efficacy and their effectiveness. Knowing what I know now about what we're calling COVID, so the questions there are one of the reasons why I decided to object to the policy. However, it has more to do with the intrusion of the federal government into my personal life. And I do not believe that I require an authority such as the federal government, and I'm speaking as a member of the federal government employee workforce. I don't think I need them to tell me how to be healthy or what substance gets injected into my body to be healthy. What happened in January, we both know there was a series of protests on Ottoman Hill. It was initiated by truckers, and they was nicknamed the Freedom Envoy. I observed all this from British Columbia, where I had been living at the time, in Hope, BC. So I was placed on leave without pay. I imminent release from the armed forces, had been in to sign a numerous amount of paperwork with regards to that process, the administrative release process. In the interim, in and around January, I got a job driving a tow truck. And being a tow truck operator, that opened my eyes to a number of things, especially with regards to the supply chain and who actually provides all of the supplies that we need in that chain. And it is the truckers and their equipment that moves all of our goods into stores so we can go out and buy them. So when this protest happened, you know, I like a number of other people, was quite happy to see Canadians coming together to speak out on this issue that affected us, because what we've been told over the 2 years is that we're this kind of minority, that doesn't seem to matter to anybody. And we're just this tiny, uneducated and ignorant mass that needs to be vilified and ignored. And that's exactly what we saw happen. So at one point I was observing these protests and was quite inspired by them. And on another hand, after a number of weeks had passed, I was also outraged as, they were insulted and then assaulted. So that we saw the implementation of emergency powers by the federal government to remove those personnel from the parliament. We saw a media machine go into high gear to further vilify those personnel who were protesting, as is their right to do so. And, what I observed and what I later came to learn firsthand was that there was no real effort by the federal government to reach out and come to an agreement or even hear the grievances. So all of this kind of weighed in on me. And then what I came to the realization that eventually use of force by the police services and potentially the military would be a course of action that we might see put into place. And that concerned me a great deal. I did not want to stand on the sidelines and as a member of the armed forces and watch members of the armed forces be deployed against our own citizens for what they were doing in protesting these mandates, which have been proved more harm, I think have done more harm than good. And I felt compelled to act in a way that was at once peaceful, yet it had, there was a message there that, and a mechanism that I could use to get my message out. So in and around February, I, like I said, seeing the direction all of this was going, seeing the heavy-handed approach that the government was using to remove protesters from the grounds of the parliament and the surrounding area, I went out. I felt that the ethical, moral and legal violation was severe enough to, at this point, finally stand up and say something as a representative of the armed forces. However, knowing full well that it wouldn't be well received, and it wasn't, more on that later. But I put my uniform on. I did a practice run with my niece, and I voiced my public criticism of these policies. And I announced what my intention was to do something about it. And that intention was to embark on a protest march from Vancouver to Ottawa. So that went, the practice run on TikTok went out on February the 12th. And then I I went down to a rally in Surrey, BC, and found a reporter to stand in front of. Actually, he was a videographer. Had a very skilled one at that. And it was kind of a serendipitous meeting because he was able to put together from his filming of me, a very powerful video that since went to kind of get out there and explain to people why I'm doing what I'm doing. So those two things happened. And then as I announced in those videos, I would depart from Vancouver on February the 20th. And that's what happened. And I have to say, it was a journey, probably a full, probably one of the most momentous things I've ever done in my life. And I'm speaking with regards to all of the experiences I've had in the armed forces over 28 years. This is something. This has been the most amazing experience. Despite the physical hardship and the psychological stress and all of the uncertainties that were around all of this, and which still exist, I might add, it has been an amazing experience. And in case you're not aware or your audience is not aware, I arrived in Ottawa on June the 30th, and I did what I said I was going to do. I placed my flag in front of it, and I put my hand on it, and I had this the completion of a kind of personal transformation, if you will, where I just, I was able to look at deep within myself and know that in the spirit of the veteran that came before me, I did something. You know, I acted in a way that was in the best interest of the country. I acted peacefully and it was a constructive fashion. And, you know, a number of folks identified strongly with what I did. And it was, again, that particular point in time was, the whirl and swirl and whirlwind of emotions that I experienced. It's difficult to put into words, but it was absolutely, I think, a powerful moment, not just for me, but also the folks in attendance. So to put it in perspective, this was always a demonstration of courage, of fortitude, of determination, and not just by me. So let's make that perfectly clear. I didn't just do this on my own. I had, on February the 20th, I met a number of folks and some of them stayed with me for the duration. And this was a volunteer effort. And there was a significant outlay of personal funds at the beginning, and that kind of was also a part of how remarkable this is, because nobody was getting paid for the duration of this 4.5 months that we took on ourselves to do this. We did end up collecting donations just to continue with the support that we needed to have in place for us to continue this march. And like I said, it was an amazing experience. The final march into the city, we wanted to demonstrate what the power of organization and determination can do. And we met on in the Ottawa area. We had folks join us from a number of different places in Southern Ontario and across the country who decided that they wanted to be a part of this march up to the War Memorial. And at one point in time, in a formation that we put, the Canadian public in, to just to give them a taste of what it's like to be a part of a march like that, put them in a formation, which enabled us to maintain safety and security, three across. And at one point in time, we had a line of people following us almost a kilometer long. So, wow. Despite what is reported, there was only a few supporters. There was actually a number, probably over 2,000 or 3,000 people there. That's just the march into the War Memorial. And then we went to the War Memorial, with the help of Ottawa Police Services, facilitating safety and keeping certain intersections and closing off certain roads. This was an entirely successful affair, with one minor scuffle kind of drawing the spotlight for the corporate media, at least. But apart from that, this was an absolutely amazing experience. The march into Ottawa was peaceful. It was organized. We demonstrated a number of things. People still were able to have fun with it. And they got a demonstration. That final march was 20 kilometers long. And, it was an eye-opening experience for some folks who had never walked that far, and including, the weather on June the 30th, a little bit warm. So it just kind of enabled them to kind of experience what myself and the team had been going through, for the last 4.5 months. And that's it. So, a number of things have come into play since that time. We've decided that we're going to go further east. It's been reported widely that I am being court-martialed, and that is the truth. That is not been made up, because to clarify, I was charged with two counts of 129 under the National Defense Act, which, just to put it in language that everybody can understand, that is misconduct, basically. So there, I did violate policies with regards to appearing in social media in uniform and making statements critical to the government vaccine policy. So I am being charged under the National Defense Act. It's not a criminal charge. And furthermore, it has not been resolved. It's yet to go to trial. And despite what's being the way it's being portrayed in the media, this was something that myself and my lawyer, Philip Millar, had decided that we wanted to do early on. So we had actually requested the court martial back in March. So it's not, you know, despite the way it's being reported, it's not, you know, this pronouncement by the Canadian Armed Forces. It's something that we asked for, because I can clarify this a little later in as much as I am able to do so, the difference between in the military justice system, the difference between a summary trial and a court martial. So there's a selection process that happens there when the accused is charged. But I will say that we did ask for a court martial, and there, after a considerable amount of time, we were finally told on June the 28th, actually, interestingly enough, 2 days before we were to arrive in Ottawa, we were told that this court martial would be going forward. To add to all of that, one of the things that I was asked early on was why I was going to do this march, what was the outcome? And to me, I see as a member of a Canadian public now, outside of the federal government, working as a private citizen in the tow truck industry, I saw how just disconnected. Let me just back that up and incorporate that experience into my march and all of the folks that I came into contact with from Vancouver to Ottawa. There's a significant amount of detachment and disenfranchisement amongst the Canadian public. They feel they have no voice, and they feel that their votes don't matter. And as taxpaying citizens, they don't feel that the government is listening to them. And so in an effort to kind of demonstrate that we still have some kind of functional system, I reached out to members of parliament during my march. So in late March, early April, I wrote a letter, and with the help of my team, I mailed that letter off to every single member of parliament. So 338 of them. And with the team's help, while I was marching and in the background, they negotiated various bureaucratic obstacles. And you know, it was just one of these things that we wanted to demonstrate that if there's enough effort and there's a concerted effort and there's the tenacity that is required, you can make your voice heard. And that's exactly what happened. So on June the 22nd, well, like I said, I mailed a letter. I asked to meet with our members of parliament, anyone and all of them, should they so choose to. That's what happened on June the 22nd. So when I say 338, I mean all of them, from the top guy to the backbencher, ministers, all of them, including sitting senators. I explained to them why I was doing what I was doing. I explained to them who I was speaking for. I was speaking for all of the federal government workers and corporate sectors, workforce that had lost their employment. And I also, speaking on behalf of those personnel in the armed forces and other services, that because they were coerced, they accepted this medical procedure that may or may not have been effective and may have been done more damage than good. So I explained that in this letter. I asked to meet with them to air my grievances. And furthermore, it became apparent to me they needed to be clear that I wasn't there to meet with them and bang the table and shout and make a spectacle of myself. I was there to air my grievances and provide a potential solution. As you might imagine, during the march, I had considerable time to think about things. And what I came to the conclusion is that I needed to work with our members of parliament. I wanted to be somebody who is coming forward, not as somebody who is quote unquote anti-government, but is actually pro-democracy and pro-government, because I want, as a Canadian taxpayer and a citizen, to work with them to make this a functional democracy. So I came up with what we call the 3R equation. And I can talk on that a little bit later, but ultimately with the meeting itself, this call was heeded by members of parliament. I had a meeting with them in Ottawa on June the 22nd. And I think that, you know, despite what action or what they will act or not act on, I think that demonstrated something, because they listened to their constituents. They heard from the folks that we had met over the 4.5 months from Vancouver to Ottawa, who felt that what I was doing was important enough to garner an audience with our members of Parliament. And can you pause the recording for a sec? I've just got to address something that. Yeah, so back to where we were at, I think that the meeting demonstrated to the Canadian public that we have some sort of functioning system here. It let's not make any mistakes about it. It's potentially, it malfunctions frequently. But I think what it demonstrates is that, like I said, if you work at it and you try hard enough, then you can establish this contact. And that's what happened on June the 22nd. We had a meeting, and I again applaud the courage of those members of Parliament in meeting with me, because this became a highly charged issue at the federal government level because of the way I was painted as being a freedom convoy organizer or representative, which is actually not the case. And this was the charges that were leveled against me were also used as ammunition to fight other members of Parliament who didn't want to suffer from guilt by association. And I think that continues going on. However, I do feel that we're making progress with regards to these establishing and maintaining these kind of contacts. So basically, on June the 30th, we arrived. We took Canada Day off as a team. I have to say that basically for 131 days, more or less, this was a continuous effort, even though physically we did not march on every fifth or sixth days, we took a day where we did not march, but there was a lot of activity in the background. And after a couple of days of thinking about it, and reflecting on the success of the march into Ottawa, reflecting on the input that I received online and in person, I felt that it was necessary, to keep this march going from Ontario into Newfoundland. And basically, that's to address the fact that, as I'm sure you're aware, the mandates have been quote unquote suspended. And there's no longer a requirement to have a vaccine to travel. However, I feel that suspended is not good enough. I feel that all mandates must be fully repealed based on a number of conversations I've had with a number of experts, one of whom I took with me into this meeting on June the 22nd. So full repealing of mandates, I think, is still required. Reinstatement of all federal government employees is necessary, and full reinstatement because it still hasn't been addressed with regards to members of the armed forces who have been released on item code 5F. And there is an injustice there because there are a number of folks that I talked to personally who got released and are only 6 months away from completing a 20-year contract, which then enables them to receive a pension. So that is something I will continue to march for and speak out against. When I talk about reinstatement, and again, well, let's talk about restitution. We had federal government employees who were deemed unfit to work or draw a paycheck, and where were they doing for 5 months or 6 months, probably suffering severe financial difficulties that I believe should be addressed. So when I talk about repealing reinstatement and restitution, that is our 3R equation, which equals repair. And that's what I think is necessary, because over the last 2.5 years, I do think that a significant amount of damage has been done to the fabric of Canadian society. There's divide here, and is based largely on the belief of what is required to keep us healthy and what we need to participate in, whether it's a measure or a medicine, what we need to maintain our health. And I believe that that's a personal decision, not the purview of a government agency. So this is what we have established going forward. We are going to continue to march, and we are going to depart on July the 18th. It is a location as yet to be determined, but in the Southern Ontario region. And we are going to march to Signal Hill, St. John's, Newfoundland, A distance of approximately 3,000 kilometers, knowing that we have some water bodies to land across over to Newfoundland. And that will all be incorporated into our plan. And the time frame we're going to give ourselves is 100 days, plus or minus 10 days. And we would like to be there at the end of October, early November. And there's a number of considerations and planning processes in place. Basically, that has been going on since July. So some of the team is assembled already, and the more team members have joined up, and some have gone back to take care of personal business. But, you know, this is something I'm looking forward to. This is, in a way, I've been told numerous times that this is something that people are, they feel good about. This is something positive that people can be a part of, and they can, it's tangible. We're accessible. You can see us driving as people are driving on the Trans-Canada Highway. And that's kind of the route that we're going to shadow, at least as much as we are able to, or get directly on. As you know, here in Ontario, there's a 400 series highway that pedestrians are not allowed on, but we'll maintain close distance to that highway so that people can still see us. And that's that. I've rambled on for quite some time, and over to you.
Sure. Thank you, James, for your summary of the last few months here. I guess my first question really is, you mentioned you had this June 22 meeting with parliamentarians. How many of the 338 attended that meeting?
23.
And
were they didn't. They were not all able to stay for the duration of the meeting.
So a paltry sum. I mean, we're kind of looking at this 10% number, which seems to be the number of Canadians that actually care about what's going on, and that are freedom loving and capitalist loving, not the the socialist communists that most of these people appear to be. Before you left, we had a personal conversation, and you had mentioned that you needed to embark upon this mission for your own mental health and well-being and personal development. Did you accomplish that goal?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, I felt strongly that something needed to be done, but something in a peaceful fashion, and something that was, you know, positive, and you know, it's a demonstration of the Canadian spirit as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, this was something and I heard it. So just to put it into context, okay, the number of people, and I'm talking about the remotest parts of British Columbia now, on as you can imagine, between we traveled along Highway 3, the Crow's Nest, until we reached Trans-Canada on Medicine Hat, and the remotest parts of Northern Ontario, at least five people in those areas, okay, would pull over, and they would, you know, feel so strongly about what I was doing that they would get out of their cars to say thank you, that this is important to them. You know, they feel that somebody is finally speaking on their behalf or doing something on their behalf. And it's interesting, I had a interview with a reporter from the Ottawa Citizen, and in that interview, she had said to me, citing an Angus Reid poll, that a majority of Canadians wish to have vaccine passports and measures in place. And I was quite perplexed by that, because the number of people that felt strongly enough to address that while I was marching was actually zero. So apart from folks who had something, who had a negative remark to shout out of a moving car window, the number of people that came to me and said, please stop this, this is wrong, here's the reasons why, with cogent analysis and arguments, and citing, you know, these numbers of Canadians who felt strongly that vaccine passports are a requirement, was, again, like, I'll reiterate that, zero, like, yeah, absolutely zero. And the folks that I met along the way are in the thousands.
Yeah, you'll never see a rabid leftist with an argument or facts, James. That's simply not reality. Describe for us any trends that you notice in terms of support along the way, province by province or rural versus urban. Did you notice a difference?
Absolutely. The support that we received, to put it into context, like right after I released that video on the internet, I would say a day later, I was being contacted by folks online who wanted to contribute in some way or be a part of this. So this happened immediately. Okay, like, so I had folks reaching out to me to say, I want to join you on this march, or I want to be able to participate remotely with the, you know, my expertise in media relations, web design, managing social media platforms and so on. So that happened like within 2 days of that video coming online. And I realized quite like right there and then that this was going to be a bigger deal than I had thought, because I originally thought this was going to be a one-man show. So that was immediate. The online support has been huge. However, I know that the internet is a fluid place, to say the least, and I'm not actually maintaining track of all of the comments that come in, but right off the bat, a lot of the comments positive, majority, they far outweighed the negative. And going out of Vancouver, now I will say that it was a Sunday morning at 7:30, so maybe a lot of folks who felt that this was something they objected to were still in bed. But there were 70 people to see me off from, if not more, from the Terry Fox Memorial in Vancouver, downtown. So, I mean, and that's including the number of folks who wanted to march out of Vancouver that day. So early in those days, it was still a mystery to a lot of folks as to who I was and what I was doing. Frequently, I would get folks pulling up and asking me why I was doing this. And then as the information got out there, as it became more widespread and wide known, the support continued to build, and it has been, you know, fairly consistent, and if not growing, you know, as we got into Ontario. With regard to urban versus rural areas, it's difficult to kind of compare the two, because I know that in the urban areas, the population is much more dense, and you know, it's harder to identify folks that support. And but I will say that, yeah, absolutely, in the rural areas, it seemed that, you know, there was a eagerness to see this kind of thing and be a part of it and participate in it. And not to say that it didn't exist in the cities. Absolutely. When I got to Winnipeg, the team and I, we had a meet and greet, and it was the largest I had seen up to that point. And this is something that had been growing and growing. So not to say that, you know, there's not this kind of an appetite for this kind of thing in the cities, because it was definitely there in Winnipeg. 500 people, as a matter of fact, I believe we had in one auditorium. And then, you know, the reception we got in Ottawa was absolutely amazing again. So there was the support there. And it was fairly consistent and grew larger the closer we got to the end goal.
Interesting. So unfortunately, I have to admit that when I speak to most people, they have no clue about you or who you are and what your mission is. Obviously, the lamestream media have seemed to agreed upon a total blackout of coverage on your journey. And, you know, given the gentleman that you just mentioned and his memorial there at BC Place that you began your journey with, you know, that wasn't that long ago that another Canadian embarked upon a similar cross-country journey and became a hero in the process. Where's the disconnect here between, you know, somebody crossing the country to bring awareness about a disease versus a gentleman crossing the country to bring awareness about people's very existence and their way of life?
Yeah, it's interesting the way it panned out. I think that as you know, and as we suspect anyway, that you know, the corporate media has you know, there's agendas, and they are there's the sellers and distributors of information, And in a way, they have partnerships with various people that we're not able to observe. However, the actions kind of speak louder than words in this case. So it was largely ignored up until the point of the meeting on June the 22nd. Then it kind of appeared on folks' radar, and it was used to as a wedge issue and a political issue to further divide, Liberal and NDP and Conservative members of Parliament. And it's unfortunate because it was also misrepresented, and or at least the information is put together in such a way as to paint, again, that, the Conservative members of Parliament are meeting with some kind of radical or extremist, and that is absolutely not the case. It became evident that once the ignoring phase was over, then the vilification phase began, and
of course.
And so again, I was painted as a freedom convoy organizer or participant, and the fact of the matter is I actually only observed it from British Columbia. And while I was inspired by it, this was my own particular protest. So we saw this happen with what happened in Parliament Hill and the protest there. Very much the corporate media obviously had their music sheets handed to them, and they sung the same song in slightly different tones. And it's I have to say, however, okay, I have changed my personal opinion amended my personal beliefs in a lot of things over the course of this march. And like I said, it's been very transformative in a way because, being in this position, reaching out to members of Parliament, having constituents of those personnel, speaking to them and asking them to speak to me, I was able to have these conversations one-on-one with various members of Parliament, because they wanted to know what they were getting into. They wanted to know who I was and what I was about. And again, I applaud them for their courage. And I came to realize that they're human beings, just like you and I. And I do believe that despite what we think of the institution as a whole, and I say that with regards to the federal government, they are people. And I became to recognize that and respect that, but they are caught up in this kind of larger institutional Game of Thrones style drama that goes on behind the scenes, which is actually causing the entire country to be harmed in a way. But like I said, I do commend them for their bravery and their courage for going to that meeting, because immediately afterwards, of course, we had that corporate media and bureaucracy partnership weigh in on that and absolutely try to paint it in as something negative, as opposed to how it could have been portrayed as something positive and demonstrating that we have a functional democratic system in some limited aspect, at least. But again, later on, that became even more protracted as with regards to the spin and the negative aspect of it, where, I was now, I'm on front page news as this, anti-vaccine mandate protester marching belligerently into Ottawa. It was just like, and I think what was alarming was the number of people who actually were participating in this march. And, they are Canadians from all walks of life, from all backgrounds, from all income brackets. I can tell you right now, I had spoke to airline pilots who had lost their jobs or refused and retired early. And I'm in addition to members of the armed forces who also took early retirements, members of the public who are vaccinated, but still felt that these measures were out of place. So I think that was, the number and the size of the crowd was alarming. Again, seeing that, Angus Reid isn't always a good predictor of the majority of people, what's on the majority of people's minds. So that, again, the process of announcing my court-martial in such a way as to make it seem like, this was now the Department of National Defense and the Canadian Armed Forces, you know, going to smite me with their justice. That was the way that was portrayed is actually, again, strategic, I should say. So the fact of the matter is, I did, going back to the previous point about humanity and people, I did have some conversations with a couple of reporters, and, you know, I pointed out to them, I said, you know, this is, I noticed your questions are primarily focused on the negative aspects of all of this, instead of trying to focus on the positive aspects of it, where you have, okay, 12 people who worked together for 4.5 months to facilitate a foot march across the country, and for the purposes of addressing an injustice. And, you know, the fact that they couldn't, you know, not even like yourself, you know, allowed me to speak, really. It was you know, always the hot button issues are forefront in their mind. They don't care about, you know, the physical hardships or the stress and the strain of managing all of the, you know, the team, or how the team came together. You know, it was all about who was at the meeting, and you know, they wanted lists of names, as if, you know, this was some kind of McCarthy era trial. So it was really I pointed that out to them, and, you know, they seemed to be receptive to kind of changing the tone of their questions, and to point to the Ottawa Citizen reporter, you know, more receptive to, you know, listening to the positive aspects of this thing. And the way, you know, for me personally, as somebody, as you know, was contemplating going to live in the woods, I became this kind of, you know, public figure, which is, you know, still I have difficulties dealing with. But I met, you know, an amazing, you know, diversity of people along the way, like I said, from all walks of life. And, you know, it was the encouragement and the generosity, and, you know, the way they opened their arms and their hearts and their homes to us, going through their towns or their villages and seeing the way they wanted to participate. I mean, it was just an absolutely, it was something to behold. I mean, I, you know, despite all of this and the reasons why I launched on this, I'm very lucky to be in this position, to have been a part of that and having to be able to witness that and meet the people along the way.
Well said, James. Well said. So there's some very powerful and iconic photos now circulating of you kneeling at the war memorial, I believe draped in a flag. Describe your thoughts and emotions that you had at that moment, if you could, please.
It's difficult. It really is. How do I put this? In my mind's eye, I saw that moment early on when I had this idea of concluding at the war memorial. I started at a place that had personal significance for me and personal meaning. And in my mind's eye, I saw myself, because of the events that happened on February the 19th and 20th with, you know, our veterans being, you know, this disgrace that they encountered because they went out and stood shoulder to shoulder with protesters and were the ones guarding the war monument from desecration. As a matter of fact, they weren't participating in any form of that. And the way they were ejected from the war memorial, which is their legacy, you know, that was one of the reasons why I chose that as an endpoint, just to show that, you know, I this was something that I want to take back for on behalf of the veterans. But also, like I said at that closing ceremony, you know, this wasn't just about veterans. This was about all of, you know, any Canadian who put themselves in harm's way for another Canadian, whether or not you were driving a truck or putting up a power line or working in the forest. You know, I mean, this is not just about, this is about sacrifice and discipline and you know, integrity and honor. So this is, you know, that's what, in my mind's eye, I saw myself going to that monument, and I saw myself putting my hand on that tomb. because that is that tomb represents the unknown, okay, the unknown person who in the performance of his duties he lost his life. And that is in a way represents us as a society too. I mean, we don't always acknowledge the sacrifices that people are out there undergoing. And, you know, I just, when it was, you know, I finally was able to put my hand there, I knew that particular phase anyway, at the back of my mind, I had a feeling this would need to continue all the way to the East Coast. But I knew at that point, that part of it was over. I had said I was going to do something, and I finished it. And you know, I showed that it could be done if you have the right people and the right mindset. And it was also kind of sad too, because you know, I was remembering all of the ones who came before me, including the ones close to me that are not with us anymore. So that is something that I also kind of. Yeah, it was emotional. I can't, you know, it's difficult to put in words, but I know a lot of people felt it, and it was amazing too that thousands of people were there, where you know they observed that kind of moment of silence with me. And yeah, I think it was emotional for the crowd as well. And then I got up and said a few words, and you know, like it was also just trying to show, okay, the people who believe that what I was doing was going to bring this catastrophe to downtown Ottawa and more mayhem, or what they believed was going to be a repeat of the Freedom Convoy, even though the Freedom Convoy. Yes, it was disruptive, but it was still peaceful and it needed to happen. And just as a brief aside, I will say that, you know, if that had not happened, I do believe we would be farther down the road towards vaccine passports and, you know, not just a vaccination for getting entry into a restaurant or a mall, but probably a vaccination to renew your driver's license. Right. I think that's the way this was all going. And had they not gone and done what they had done, this is the direction. This is probably where we'd be at now. So to go back to the final day there, you know, I was able to say, listen, prove just how wrong these prognosticators were with the, you know, this is going to evolve into some kind of chaos for the people of Ottawa and all of the police and all of the security forces. And it didn't happen. And apart from one minor scuffle, which kind of was expected, given that it is Thursday night before a long weekend, you know, this is, I said my piece, people heard it. I said, this is not over by any means, but we're going to go forward in a slightly different fashion. And it just proved how wrong, like I said, all of the naysayers and all of the folks who had their minds thoroughly twisted by their exposure to corporate media outlets. So it was ultimately, I kind of flatlined in a way that you do when, you know, the roller coaster is coming to the platform. And that same kind of sensation, you know, there's ups and downs and turns and twists, and then time to get off the ride. And we just decided to stay on the ride for a little bit longer as it stands now.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very powerful image, James, and, you know, clearly it's representative of, you know, here is a gentleman who is in his own time and volition expressing his concerns for himself and his fellow man. And, you know, yet sort of falling on deaf ears from the mainstream and the establishment. So very, very polarizing image of that love and support that you got from the average Canadian versus what the establishment would like us to see or believe. It does seem ironic to me that just as you make your presence known in Ottawa, our new dishonorable health minister, who is actually an economist by trade, announced gleefully that Canadians will require this useless injection every 9 months to be compliant and included with society. How did you receive that announcement?
Yeah, I didn't really pay much attention to it. Like I have to say, a lot of the back and forth and, the comment section, I remain distant from it. The mainstream media headlines were only ever something on the periphery of my vision, because up to that point, we are trying to reach Ottawa. We established this deadline of June the 30th. The day before Canada Day, to kind of set the tone for what was to come, on the Canada Day, and also, in order to achieve 45 to 50 kilometers a day, it takes 10 to 12 hours of marching every day. So when I'm doing that, I'm not listening to podcasts or reading the news or listening to commentary. I have my eyes and ears open and my head up, and I'm maintaining situational awareness because I'm walking along often on the opposite side of the road to maintain maximum safety. I'm walking into oncoming traffic, and I'm just, I'm focused on the task at hand, not necessarily the voices in the background. And, I thoroughly encourage you to become active and also disengage from that media at least for an hour or so a day, so that the level of mental clarity that you could achieve by not being continually bombarded by these messages, it's astounding. I will say that I was able to do some of my best thinking while I was detached from these devices and able to focus on the horizon.
Excellent, excellent. And so, James, what's keeping you motivated these days? In the face of so much opposition and personal challenge and hardship.
I would say that the opposition is purely is fairly paper thin. I don't believe that. They have the same level of courage as like the members of my team or like the members of parliament who chose to meet with me, or any journalists with integrity. I don't think they have the same level of courage because they are not engaging with me. I'm not having interview requests from big names at CBC or CTV or the Globe and Mail. And if they do choose to look down their nose at me, they're not. They're not asking the questions that need to be asked. They're only asking questions that they want to use to paint a picture for their audiences, right? So that level of opposition, I don't really take seriously. Like I said, we are in preparation for a court martial, and that could happen unless they choose to expedite it, and I mean significantly. That is something that may happen months or years from now. And I am not at all concerned. And even if I am fairly confident in the Canadian Armed Forces, despite all of this, I think that there are individuals there who will be sure to make this a fair trial when it happens. And if there is something nefarious at work in the background to make it unfair, and I do have to face some sort of severe penalty, I am fully prepared because, like I said, I have the ability to go to jail, if that's what it comes to, and still be able to look at myself in the mirror.
Sure. Yes. Yes. So your conscience is clear and you've done the work that you needed to do and wanted to do. So, James, I'm not sure I had any further questions for you here today. If listeners would like to learn more about you or support you and your journey and your mission, where would I direct them?
CanadaMarches.ca. And then from there, you can go to all of our, the links to all of our social media platforms is there, as well as I believe there is a Rumble presence. I'm not entirely sure. Like I said, I have kind of, I have a team both online and on the ground that kind of manages a lot of that stuff, including emails. Email is another way you can get in touch, CanadaMarches@protonmail.com. And we do our best to stay on top of those incoming emails. And of course, you can, if you so desire, starting on July the 18th, we shall be leaving from the environs of Southern Ontario. More than likely, we shall be on Highway 2, handrailing the 401 on our way to the East Coast over the next 3 months or so. So if you so choose, you could find us on the road, look for our media, or look for places where we're going to announce meet and greets in towns and cities, and come talk to me directly. This is one of the amazing things about this. I'm accessible, and people come talk to me. I'm not afraid, and I would be more than happy to meet anybody.
Okay, excellent. And on the Canada Marches website, do you have a copy of your route information that people can access?
That will be forthcoming.
Okay, excellent. All right, sir. Well, thank you so much for your service and your continued efforts to ensure the ongoing freedom of Canadians, in spite of their ignorance, perhaps. But your efforts and your endeavors and your sacrifices are not going unnoticed by many of us.
Thank you. And thank you for allowing me to talk about it and get my side of the story out.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to you completing your journey and swinging back this way and feeding you some more steak, sir.
Yeah, and say hi to Vincent for me.
I shall. All the best, sir. Take care. Best of luck on your journey.
Have a good one, Michael.
Cheers. Bye-bye.